from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
You'd better tell the captain we've got to land as soon as we can. This woman has to be gotten to a hospital.
A hospital? What is it?
It's a big building with patients, but that's not important right now.
Well, that's the late Leslie Nielsen from the beloved movie Airplane. The film was honored last night as part of the San Francisco Sketchfest Comedy Festival, and the 1980 film Airplane was honored at the Castro Theater. It was also voted one of the 10 funniest American movies by the American Film Institute. It's the creation of three Milwaukee guys, the brothers Zucker, Jerry and David, and Jim Abrams. They all join us for this half hour, and about time you guys got honored. That's your feeling about this, right?
Long overdue, yes.
By the way, this was not only, I should mention, selected as one of the 10 funniest movies of all time. There is even another legacy here that I wanted to mention, or a recent, besides the Castro honoring and so forth. It was also selected as one of the 25, most important films for the Library of Congress in their permanent preservation.
That's great.
Did you know that?
We're hoping to get into the top 20.
Yeah. Well, along with The Exorcist, Front Page, Malcolm X, Saturday Night Fever, Pink Panther.
I don't know. I didn't like all those movies.
Oh, yeah. But you liked Airplane and you liked Naked Gun.
Malcolm X did not have as many jokes.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Well, you had a lot of jokes. They held up. You know, I mean, how many people in the United States and throughout the world know it when you hear it, Don't Tell Me Shirley? It's like a signature, really. I mean, it is a signature, really, isn't it? You had a couple of losses this year, though. I mean, sadly enough, identify with Airplane. Not only Leslie Nielsen, whose voice we heard earlier on, Barbara Billingsley from Leave It to Beaver. And I think the movie just really holds up. And what I can't get over is sort of the Horatio Alger story behind this, because you were, at least from what I've read in The Guardian and other things, sort of three cut-ups. In fact, David, your teacher said to you, what's the story you tell? I'll be laughing at something you write years from now, but don't.
But for now, shut up in class and get the books, yes. Yeah. It could have been Jerry. Yeah,
could have been any of you, maybe.
And then he said, Don't call me Shirley.
And so, yes, and that's where we got that line.
Let's talk about that movie, though. You know, it seems like kind of Mad Magazine comic books. It came out of your boyhood in many ways, didn't it?
Really? Well, and Mad Magazine is quite accurate. I think we were very much inspired by Mad Magazine, and in particular a column called Scenes We'd Like to See, where they would lay out a parody of a movie scene, and they would lay it out very kind of rigidly, without any silly characters or without any silly scenery, and they would wait till the final panel and then kind of do a joke. And that was sort of the pattern for the way we went about Airplane too. The actors are serious, the score is serious and kind of melodramatic, and that allowed us to do our silliness.
That's Jim Abrams talking. And of course, there were all these sort of disaster movies and Airplane movies. You had Arthur Haley's novel put to a film and so forth, so it was part of maybe the zeitgeist, you know, the spirit of the time, something like that, Jerry Zucker?
We were always, in our minds, we were always doing a send-up of a, you know, 50s acting style, and particularly a movie called Zero Hour, which was written by Arthur Haley, actually. But it you know, we always loved the old style, and as opposed to the, you know, airport movies, which we did obviously incorporate some of those, you know, the nun and the little sick girl on the plane and all that kind of thing. But we love that old style, and we love the sound. We actually originally wanted to do it on a prop plane, a propeller plane, because that was so much in our heads, and it was really kind of fit with that style. But in the end, we put it on a jet plane, but with the sound of propellers of a prop plane. But
the genius of it was that the actors played it so straight, like out of the 50s, as you suggested. And nowadays, I was thinking about that line of Robert Stack's, you know, seeing, have you ever seen a man naked? You know, I don't know if you could get away with a line like that in today's world.
Well, the rating system for movies has completely turned upside down since Airplane. I mean, Airplane Stand actually got a PG rating. Yet we had nudity, we had drug usage, and all sorts
child
of
molestation,
pedophilia.
Jokes,
I mean,
pedophilia
it was
jokes, yeah.
Even the jive talk might be a little bit borderline today. You think?
Right.
I don't
not
know about
politically correct,
the ratings, but certainly not politically correct. And
I should mention to listeners, there was jive talk, and then there were translations underneath with African American actors playing that jive talk. Talk about how you kind of reinvented Leslie Nielsen, didn't you?
It's amazing to us now that we know, you know, after we got to know Leslie, that he could have done all those serious movies for all those years, because he really is a closet comedian. We didn't so much reinvent him as allowed him to play characters that were much closer to himself, or I should say, to what he really loved to do. He was a closet comedian.
And we should mention the film actually made $80 million in its first release and launched Police Squad and Naked Gun and had a great deal to do with Saturday Night Live. In fact, when I go back to sort of the roots of the pace of this film and what you developed through the film, it goes back to live theater experiences. You guys worked on something called Kentucky Fried Theater.
Yeah, it was correct. Very much like, the Mickey Rudy, Judy Garland movies, Let's Do a Show. And we put, fixed up the back of a bookstore in Madison, Wisconsin, back in 1971, and made a 70-seat
I was there
theater.
Then. I'm sorry, but I never ran across any of you.
Really?
Or maybe I did.
That's because
maybe
I'm
at Ellis Delicatessen, perhaps,
yeah.
Over on State Street.
I'm just making this up. That's why you never saw it. But no, it was on
Regent
Street. Yeah, 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 whatever. But and we did, that we ran that for a year on the campus, and we did, sketches and blackouts, and then we moved the show on a U-Haul truck to L.A. And we remodeled an old warehouse into a 140-seat theater.
But you were pioneers. I mean, scary movies, weigh-in type stuff, really had its roots again with the work you did. You think?
Yeah, I think we proved that satire could work, because I think
there satire was satire or parody. Maybe.
Well, we particularly I like to think of it as satire, because to me. It was both, really. Parody.
It's about this with Craig Mazin.
Well, here's it depends on how you define it. I define, a joke like Don't Call Me Shirley is just generalized, it's just satire on that kind of serious acting and stuff.
But it's
then
Groucho
when we
Marx
do a spoof,
gag,
then when we do,
stuff,
when we do
too?
Saturday Night Fever gag, I would say parody, because we're parodying something that exists in a film. So I don't know that that's in
what
fact
was,
the
I,
definition.
What was Mad Magazine scenes we'd like to see?
That was parody.
That was parody.
That
was parody.
Yeah,
and then,
that's
but,
more parody.
But
right.
Our
and,
stuff
and,
is a,
and,
yeah.
And I don't think we ever, what we shot for, the highest that we shot for is you don't have to take something seriously. And I kind of think of that more as parody, whereas satire is like Dr. Strangelove. Or
it's more pointed.
It's more pointed. It has a political point of view,
right?
And it has something more to say to the audience than you don't really have to take that scene or that character seriously.
But when I think of Don't Call Me Shirley, I think of, for example, I say it's a gag or it's a kind of a silly gag. I think of something like Groucho Marx and the Marx Brothers, Horse Feathers. Yeah. He says he's the dean. He says we need the seal, and he's going to come in with it holding a seal. It's right out of that kind of comedy.
Yeah, we loved the Marx Brothers. Big Marx Brothers. Fans
and Woody Allen were
all big influences,
and the Farrelly brothers loved you guys because they were pretty much influenced by you, weren't they?
Yeah, no, they're great guys, and we actually gave them their first job writing.
I read their first script.
Yeah,
and it was I think it was Dumb and Dumber. It was probably called some other name, and I thought, hey, these guys are great.
I'm going to bring our listeners into this. If you'd like to talk to the Zuckers and Jim Abrams, and if you have memories, particularly of Airplane or Naked Gun, as so many do, and you want to join us, please feel free to do that. Our toll-free number is available to you, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. If you'd like to join the conversation, please do so. It's 866-733-6786 for your calls. Again, toll-free from wherever or however you're listening to us, 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to us, forum@kqed.org, or you can post a question or comment on our website by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on this segment. And here's the cockpit confusion scene with pilot Clarence Silver, played by Peter Graves, and co-pilot Roger Murdoch, played by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Flight 209er, you are cleared for takeoff.
Roger.
Huh? L.A. departure frequency 123.9er.
Roger.
Huh?
Request vector. Over.
What? Flight 209er, clear for vector 324.
We have clearance, Clarence.
Roger, Roger. What's our vector, Victor?
Howard radio clearance, over.
That's Clarence, over.
Over.
Roger.
Huh?
Roger, over.
I think it's wonderful that you guys still smile at your own cleverness, is really what it is. Wasn't Pete Rose supposed to have that part first with the Kareem head?
Yeah, we had originally written the part for Pete Rose, and this was before Pete Rose was known to be the fellow he is today. He's just a baseball player then. And
not a gambler or known as a
gambler. Yeah, or all the other stuff. And but it wound up that we filmed Airplane during the summer when he was playing baseball. So we had to find a different athlete, and we were big fans of Kareem, and so we rewrote the part for Kareem.
And you also had O.J., of course, in Naked Gun. How did you come to cast O.J.?
Well, you know, there were all these movies that had athletes as actors, and it struck us that they were, you know, particularly, you know, not good at acting, but they were always stuck in there. Even in Zero Hour, the movie that we modeled Airplane after, it was Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch. From, as it turns out, the University of Wisconsin,
right.
And he was not a great actor. So anyway, so we wanted to cast an athlete there and then expose him as not being an actor, and that's really what happened. And I think you know, Kareem wasn't necessarily interested in being in it, but I think at the time he was collecting Oriental rugs and he needed to buy one, and his business manager would not let him buy this rug unless he appeared in the movie.
That's David Zucker again, his co-writer and director of Airplane and the Naked Gun series and producer of An American Carol. Jerry Zucker also with us, producer of Rat Race and First Night, and Jim Abrams, producer of Hot Shots and Hot Shots Part Deux, also both co-directors and co-writers of Airplane. Let's go to our callers, and let's begin, Heather, with you. Good morning.
Good morning. I just had a comment. When I was in eighth grade, my mom dropped me off with a friend to see our first movie. In the mall, and we were dead set on seeing an R-rated movie, which I can't even remember what it was, and they wouldn't let us in, and they said the only thing you can see is Airplane, and we had no idea what that was, and we were really mad about it, and I have never laughed so hard before or since, and I just wanted to call and say thank you.
Thank you.
That's nice. So you were less angry after seeing Airplane about missing.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
Great. Yes.
It doesn't get old, that kind of comment, does it, to any of you? I mean, it still feels good, right?
Yeah. We're
I mean, people tell you how much they made you laugh. It's a wonderful thing. Let me get to some more of our callers, hear what they have to say. And that's Elizabeth who's next. Hi.
Hi. You guys know me as Buffy. I went to Shorewood.
Oh, Buffy.
Hi.
Oh, sure. Hi, Buffy.
Listen, I just wanted you to
Buffy
say
McKinnon?
How proud we are, yeah. And how thrilled and special I felt sitting in the movie theater watching Airplane. Why don't you tell him where the names of the characters came from?
Oh, yeah. They were all
high school people?
High school friends of ours.
Yeah. Rex Kramer, Steve McCroskey,
and Louis Netz. Gats.
Yeah. They're all people we went to high school with.
Nobody talked about litigation or anything like that?
Oh, they were thrilled.
Everybody was thrilled, yes. Except our high school principal, who that was the villain in Kentucky Fried Movie, Dr. Klon.
Well, Joe Esterhaus named a villain after me, but that's a whole story in itself. John Landis actually was launched as a result of your work as well, wasn't he?
We helped each other. John actually had directed a movie called Schlock when he was 21. It was his first film, and he was on The Tonight Show because, you know, he was a young kid who had made this movie. And David saw him and thought, gee, maybe, you know, he's young and he's made a movie.
26,
maybe he'll,
yeah.
No, he's 21.
He was 21 at the time.
Yeah, 21. Oh. And he said, gee, maybe he'd talk to us, you know, because we didn't know anybody in the movie business. And we kind of wanted to write movies. And so David got his number from the distributor and called him. And at first John was furious, like, where did you get this?
Pickman gave me the number.
Why would they're giving away my home phone number? But then he was really nice, and David invited him to the show, and he came, and then we met the four of us and just asked him a lot of questions about movie making, and I think we wanted to know, how do you write a script, and what's the form of a script? So he said, well, I'll give you one, and he gave us a script which was titled American Werewolf in London,
and we had literally never seen a movie script before.
Yeah.
And when did you get connected with Lorne Michaels?
Never did.
He came to see the show with Dick Ebersol during, I think, in about 1974, 1975. And this is, I mean, I didn't talk to Lorne about this, but I read it in the Saturday Night Live book that he was pitching the idea for Saturday Night Live to Dick Ebersol, taking him to see Kentucky Fried Theater, saying, I want to do this on national television. Mm-hmm. And so Dick Ebersol evidently liked the show. And we actually have a tape somewhere of those guys backstage. Dick Ebersol and Lorne Michaels.
And I've got some emails here about Kentucky Fried Theater. Here's actually a comment on the web. My college years were spent in Los Angeles with Kentucky Fried Theater on Pico Boulevard, a great theater, wonderful evening out. Thanks to the three of you for some great times. Another listener writes, I came to California in 1973, visiting L.A. first. I was very into National Lampoon, Fire Sign Theater, etc. back then, so I went to see this unknown, to me anyway, review called Kentucky Fried Theater and was rolling on the floor the whole show. So I knew of you before Airplane and felt like I was in on something before the general public and felt very smug about it. Thanks for the laugh, you guys.
That's great.
Another listener named Jody writes, would you tell us how you discovered the amazing Julie Haggerty? Did you discover her, actually?
Sort of. I mean, we were in New York doing auditions. We had auditioned both L.A. and New York, a lot of people. And, you know, it's a funny thing when someone people aren't reading the role correctly, or when you have people who aren't really right for the part, and the reader, you think, geez, it's not that good. You didn't, you know, maybe we have to rewrite this, and we're never going to find anyone. And then Julie came in, and it was just like she was perfect, and without really trying. In other words, she's kind of that's just Julie. She has a natural sense of being very funny without trying how and feeling very natural at the same time. So people always seem to ask, you know, is she really like that? And then we thought we were brilliant and our lines were all really funny.
Right.
Because when she read the lines,
we laughed.
Her first audition, we just after she left, we said, okay, that's the one.
And Robert Hayes was also excellent. I mean, the first time he came in. And the only
first
other,
audition, you mean? Yeah.
His first audition, and the only other one who we thought could do it was one other guy who was good, and that was David Letterman.
We'll go to more calls then. Well, welcome, Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hi there. I wanted to thank those guys for some of the greatest humor I've ever seen, and see if they would talk a bit about the tragically short-lived Police Squad. I mean, surely people are clamoring for.
It was a TV show for those who don't remember or know. Yeah.
Right. We were fans of this old television show called M Squad starring Lee Marvin. And so after Airplane, we were looking about for a movie to do. We wanted to make a movie of like that, but we kind of gave up because we couldn't figure out how to do the plot. So they suggested – I think Paramount suggested we do it as a TV series. And so that's what we wrote it and, you know, we did – 6 episodes, and it flopped from the beginning.
And the ratings actually went down every week, and it was kind of interesting. The guy, Tony Thomopoulos, who ran ABC at the time, commented on why he canceled it, and part of the reason he said is the problem with it was that you actually have to watch the TV screen in order to appreciate the humor. And when you think about it, a lot of television you can watch from the other room. You can actually be in the other room and get the whole show. But we had a lot of visual gags and that kind of thing, and so it just didn't catch on. And it turned out to be an absolute blessing because for two reasons. Number one, we didn't have the energy to do a half hour a week, and it wound up being the Naked Gun series.
So a listener named Sam who says, I've been a fan of Airplane for, he puts in parentheses, cough, decades. I've always had one question. The housewife whose husband gets sick from the fish and asks for second cups of coffee, was there more jokes for that housewife but were not included in the movie? Her character always struck me as having many more joke lines possible. And thanks for many years of humor and laughs.
I don't know. I can't remember. I don't think we thought of any more jokes.
I don't remember cut jokes. There may have been something with her that was cut. Yeah. I certainly don't remember. But if you have other ideas for jokes, please send them in.
Really? You're still open to the possibility.
Yeah, we could still possibly do a voiceover. Yeah.
Another listener writes, Airplane is my favorite movie of all time. My favorite character was the Air Tower associate who was responsible for some of the funniest lines. Quote, I can make a hat or a brooch or a pterodactyl. Mm-hmm. Where did you find the actor who played that character and any interesting backstage stories?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, that was Steven Stucker, who was in our live show, Kentucky Fried Theater. For 5 years in L.A., and he was also our piano player, brilliant pianist. And so we wanted to cast him somewhere in Airplane, so we selected this the role of the air controller. He was impossible to write any lines for because, you know, he himself kind of had to come up with them because it was his personality. So what we would do is we wrote the straight lines in the script. And like, for instance, the questions in the press conference that he holds. And so we called him up one day and we read him the straight lines and he came up with, you know, what kind of a plane was it? And he said, oh, it was a big, pretty white one with red stripes. It looks like a big Tylenol. And we just would write down his lines, and that's what he would do.
We created that part for him, yeah, as opposed to casting him in a pre-written role.
Yeah, that's right.
We're talking with David and Jerry Zucker and Jim Abrams, and I want to remind you that the San Francisco Sketch Fest runs through February 5th. You can visit sfsketchfest.com for more information. They have quite a program
and
going
on. Sketch Fest is fantastic, by the way. I should mention. We had a blast doing it, so if you get invited to Sketch Fest, definitely go. And
tonight,
and I know tonight they're doing James L. Brooks and Danny DeVito is going to be there.
That's right.
Which is going to be great. And then Murphy Brown, I think, February 2nd.
Candace Bergen, yeah. Right. Let me just have a couple more emails here because this is a transatlantic testament to Airplane. Allison writes, love the film. My mom and dad were visiting from London, and on a rainy San Francisco afternoon, we rented a few movies, one of which was Airplane. My mom insisted that she couldn't possibly be interested in watching the film and rather snootily said she'd much rather read a book. From the opening credits, she was hooked. The book was forgotten, and she spent the entire film roaring with laughter, tears streaming down her face.
Well, anytime we can get people away from their books.
It's part of our
make them less literate if you possibly right, can. Right. I understand that. Anne writes, the reason these movies are still funny is that they always play dead straight. This takes great actors and great directors. They still make me giggle and sometimes howl. And by the way, you're listening to Forum. As I said, we're talking with David and Jerry Zucker and Jim Abrams. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, simply go to kqed.org. I'm Michael Krasny. A caller joining us from Detroit, Michigan. John, that's you. Hi.
Hey, you guys do fabulous, fabulous work. But I do have one quick question. The woman that was applying the makeup during the turbulence, wasn't that one of your mom's? And what kind of negotiation did it take to get her to play the part?
It was Charlotte Zucker.
Paved the way for Rob Reiner, right?
It didn't take a lot of negotiation. She loved – she's in all our films, actually. I mean, I think Mom has been
she
in like 12
movies,
or 15 or films or whatever.
Doesn't Scorsese do that with his mother too? He puts her in a lot
of
films.
Rob
Reiner and
Mom, Estelle Reiner is in a lot of his films too. She loves it.
I thank the caller, and on we go to Mark, who's joining us from San Francisco. Hi, Mark.
Hi, I had a quick question. I'd like to sort of suggest that you guys did for film what the early Mad Comics and Harvey Kurtzman did for comics. It's just like sort of dropping acid into the minds of everybody who ever saw it. Either. And I was just wondering if you considered that an influence on you at all?
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, thank you. Mad Magazine and Kurtzman and all those, I mean, it was a huge and probably our first influence because I think before I really started paying attention to comedy movies, we all read Mad Magazine.
Even to the point of, you know, in Mad Magazine, we didn't mention there were all sorts of things happening in the background.
Right.
And I think that was a kind of an influence.
None of you live in Milwaukee anymore, I take it? You've all
correct.
Left Milwaukee behind. Will Durst, one of our local comics, of course, is from Milwaukee, and we have an ongoing set of gags, which I won't bore you with here on air. But what about sort of growing up in Milwaukee? How does that figure into the whole picture of who you became and what you became?
I think it has a lot to do with who we became. I mean, if you grow up in a small Midwestern town that's usually the brunt of jokes, you do sort of learn a self-effacing sense of humor, and you learn not to take yourself so seriously as opposed to growing up in a big coastal city that kind of considers itself where it's at. And you can see that tradition going on today when you coincidentally, the Green Bay Packers are playing in the Super Bowl, and the whole cheesehead thing, I think, is sort of an indication of that same attitude. We can have a laugh at our own expense.
You're still working together and a project on tap? Yeah, what are you doing now?
We all live together. We're married to the same woman.
Yeah, and we're watching the Super Bowl together.
Super Bowl together.
Yeah. Now there's a movie there, for sure. Yeah,
and we've all seen a grown man naked.
Yeah, it's been a twisted life.
And it continues. Any projects, though, in the works?
Individually stuff. Yeah, but nothing in a theater near you soon.
Soon.
Yeah. Let's try to get another caller on. Neil, that's you.
Hi. People out there who want to finance
movies. Yeah, a couple questions. First, the last time I saw Airplane on TV, Howard Jarvis's part had been cut out of the picture. What was that all about? Also, a lot of the credits at the end, which are also often very funny, were cut out. And the second question is, how exactly did Kentucky Fried Movie become a movie?
The Howard Jarvis thing, you know, it's at the end of the very end of the credits. So sometimes on TV,
But you know, the whole part wasn't cut out. I don't recall it being shown on TV.
No, they wouldn't.
The entire part got getting cut out. I don't know. Unless were you on? Had you been under medication during that time?
Not lately. No.
Okay. And the Kentucky Fried Movie, was. Based on our live stage show, Kentucky Fried Theater, so about a third of it were bits directly from the show, and the rest we wrote and we went around trying to get it financed for a long time, and finally made 15 minutes of it with our own, or 10 minutes of it with our own money, four gags, and took that around and then got it financed. That's a real short story of how that got made.
Let me thank Neil for the call. Quick call from Half Moon Bay. Dean, hi.
Hi. I was actually a childhood friend of Julie's, Julie Haggerty.
Oh, really?
Okay. And my friend and I, we heard that Julie was going to be in a movie. I don't know if you guys mentioned that was Julie's first movie or not. But
yeah. Right.
Anyway.
Well, that's, I think, why the caller said something about how did you get Julie Haggerty into the business to begin with. Yeah.
She was a model before that.
Well, I'm going to wrap things up here and... Do you mind if I call all of you Shirley and say,
be my
please,
guest?
Yes.
Thank you so much for being with us. And congratulations again, because the honors just keep coming after all these years.
It's been great.
Thank you. It's been great. And thank you, Sketchfest.
Sketchfest, again, runs through the 5th of February. Visit sfsketchfest.com for more information. The creators of the beloved Airplane, David Zucker, Jerry Zucker, and Jim Abrams. We're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Want to extend thanks to Senior Editor Dan Zoll and to our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Amy Machado. Our engineer is Danny Bringer, and our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. And for all of us here at KQED Public Radio, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.